Welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and we're delighted to have you with us this morning. And this morning we have a special guest, and I'm going to let my good friend Mike Lyng introduce him. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Joyce. I'm doing great, and I hope you are. It's a fantastic program that we have lined up today.
Great. Take it away.
Okay. Well, thank you. I had the privilege of meeting this gentleman during a meal at a Mexican restaurant sometime back in Mexico. And despite the mariachi band and the crowd and the noise and everything, this is one of the most fascinating, engaging people I have ever met. And his name is Nick Nicholson. He and a group of other people have organized the Judy Nicholson Foundation for Kidney Cancer. Nick, welcome to the program, and why don't you tell us a little bit about your organization and your wife's battle with cancer and how it came to be named the Judy Nicholson Cancer Foundation, and we'll
sure.
go from there.
Well, I'll be glad to, and thank you, Mike, Joyce, and Robin. It's a pleasure to be with you, an honor. Let me tell you about Judy's story. In November of 07, she had her annual physical, which was fairly comprehensive. She had never been in the hospital at all except to have two children. She had never been sick, but in February of 08, she had a fainting spell, and we quickly, because of the circumstances, took her to the doctor. They ended up doing a CAT scan and discovered a stage 4 metastasized tumor in her right kidney. Mm-hmm. In early March, they did a radical surgery, removing the kidney, found that it had gone into some lymph nodes, which they did remove. Also, there were some spots in her lungs that they chose not to go after. Like everybody else, at that point, we were full of hope, thankful that it had been, we had such a great medical team treating her, and it was optimism for a bright future, but that was not to be. Because in June, it started returning in terms of pain, intense pain, and by July it got to be something that was just unmanageable. So there was a second surgery in August, and in that surgery they found that the cancer had metastasized to her spinal column, and that required, at that time, they removed the tumor, put in a prosthesis, but during that surgery she was paralyzed on her left side. She finally died in October of that year. So 7 months from the first sign of a cancer until an awful ending, 7 months later. And the trauma of that caused our family and me and even Judy, because we talked to her during the latter stages of this. There'd been no early detection, no early warning, no nothing, no symptom whatsoever. And we felt so helpless. And then at the same time, there was no support group. We tried locally. There was no kidney cancer support group. The doctor at Mayo Clinic were unable to identify anyone. There was a cancer support group. But I think we would recognize that the symptoms and the treatment of kidney cancer is far different from, say, breast or prostate or what have you. So there was no one to talk to. And so as a result of all of this, we decided we needed to form something here locally so that others wouldn't have to go down this awful road we went through, mainly to search for early detection and patient support. The early detection, of course, involves research and funding for it. We tried diligently for several years to various fundraisers. Art for Hope was trademarked by us, and some other things, introducing fine art and low-end art to raise funds. But it wasn't that it was unproductive, but the amount of funding we were able to raise and contribute was so small. We felt like we could do other things better than that. And so over the years, we've evolved. We've come through where now we're aware of research, but we don't try to raise funds for it. We have others. We let others do that, such as the government and the farmers and very wealthy people who can contribute millions of dollars at a time, whereas we were contributing hundreds or maybe a few thousand at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, we now, in fact, 10 days ago, we held a planning retreat. And we've now evolved where our focus, after all of this time, is education and patient support. We think it's important, as we've talked to so many other patients and people who are dealing with us, caregivers, that education is important because, as we would know, you would know, and we're told that only about 3% of the kidney cancer patients are informed at the time of their treatment that clinical trials are available. They just, if they're told, and I'm frankly believe I was told, but I was so traumatized by the process, it didn't register with me. And I might have looked at other avenues later had I been able to discuss it with someone, but that was not to be. So education and telling people about the symptoms and about treatments and about the whole process of the kidney cancer disease is important to us. And patient support. We've kind of coined a phrase called patient to patient. And we think it's important to have patients be able to talk to one another, to discuss the various treatments they're receiving, the options they have, the drugs they're taking, the medical team treating them, the scope of the treatment, so many other things. So it's patient support, and through that we're in the process of ramping up our website to make it more robust, to reach more people, to offer patient-to-patient one-on-one discussion. It seems like the most productive avenue we've found is the education aspect, because we now offer free kidney cancer symposiums for patients, caregivers, interested people, and then even professionals who might not be in the loop in the oncology arena but would want to know about it. So these free symposiums are being held, and we have a goal now of hosting, presenting a minimum of 4 symposiums a year. For example, in June, we had a kidney cancer symposium in Indianapolis. It was very well received, so well received, as a matter of fact, that the patients, caregivers, and friends that were there have encouraged us and asked us to help them create a Judy Nicholson Kidney Cancer Foundation in Indianapolis. So that is not planning. It's in the action stage of being created. And, of course, that takes a lot of effort and a backbone, and we have the medical group there that's supporting it, along with people who have had to deal with this disease. We had a kidney cancer symposium in Jacksonville, which had been rescheduled due to an earlier hurricane, and the attendance was not what we wanted or what the people wanted, but at the time of the March symposium, that we had other issues going on, holidays and vacations for kids. And so, we've decided, because of popular demand, we're hosting another one on December the 1st in Jacksonville at the University of North Florida. So that would mean in Indianapolis in June, we'll have Jacksonville in December. But we just found out Friday we're going to be hosting another one in Miami on November the 3rd. This will be hosted by the University of Miami at their medical facilities, and we will work with the medical team there and other supporters to make this an event encompassing everybody. And when I say everybody, you may be aware that in Miami, so many people don't speak English or don't speak it well enough to engage in and kind of a medical conversation like this. So we will bring in a translation team so that people who are focused or have only the ability to speak Spanish will be able to participate in this actively. So it'll be an English-Spanish symposium dealing with kidney cancer, in which medical professionals will be talking to folks there about the current treatments, all of the issues that they think is important to us to know about. And then we lastly think we're going to have one in Philadelphia right after the first of the year by invitation. So these things seem to be gaining a foothold. People are asking for it. It's free, but it's dedicated to the people on the ground, the people that are dealing with kidney cancer, the patients, the friends, the family, the survivors. So in a nutshell, that's what we're doing, both in where we've evolved, why we're trying to do this, because of the trauma that we went through as a family and we've seen so many other people go through. And part of this evolution was an eye-opener when we attended the International Kidney Cancer Coalition meetings. It opened our eyes into so much more that we could do and we wanted to do than we were doing. It's a wonderful group of people there that have a goal of just helping others, informing others, and spreading the word about kidney cancer, and it energized us. So in a nutshell, Mike and ladies, that's where we are, I think. I'd be open to questions about that or further discussion.
Well, Nick, that's a very good summary, and I really appreciate that. And since Robin has been on vacation, and she's very insightful into a lot of the ways that, support groups and everything have to function and everything. Robin, have you got any questions or comments for Nick on this?
Nick, how was it expanding from Florida outward?
Say that again, please.
How was it expanding your services outward from Florida?
It was by request. We weren't preparing to do that. It wasn't on our list of goals. But when we got to Indianapolis, the doctors there and the patients, there was nothing like that in Indianapolis. They had no support group of any type. They saw what we were doing, the program we brought to them. So they've asked us to help. And so we have one doctor who's tends to be the backbone there. He's an oncologist. And then three people, one is a caregiver and two are patients or survivors that are the keystones to it. And we're working with them. The president of the Judy Nicholson Foundation, who is Linda Ostosky, and I have worked with them by email and phone, and we'll be flying back to Indianapolis at whenever they tell us that they've got the date set to have another meeting to give them access to so many things we're doing. We'll let them use our website. We'll let them have anything that we've got that they want to do. It'll be a separate entity. It'll be a chapter of the foundation, but they will have their own, I'll call it governing body or leadership group, and go from there. But we will help them any way they want to establish a functional, effective support group.
Oh, I think that's really exciting.
Well, Joyce, you got any questions?
Sure. So your symposia are open both to doctors and to patients?
Yes. Yes.
That's wonderful. So, and get the doctors and the patients talking with one another?
Yes.
How are they formatted?
It's in a day. It starts about 7:30, goes to about 4. We have probably 5 professional speakers, MDs, and always one researcher. You might know Al Copeland. He's one of our speakers, has been in the past for most of these things. But we have a researcher and MDs, and they talk about a urologist, a surgeon, talking about that sort of thing. And it's an open forum in that we have breaks and we encourage people to talk. What we see most often really is patient-to-patient discussions, because you have patients coming from other areas. And it's a eye-opening for them to be able to talk to another patient about what they're going through. And then we have some of the more technically involved or established groups, that probably family, that want to talk to the physicians. And the physicians are eager to talk, eager to spend time with the patients. Mm-hmm. So we make it as informal as we can. We always have a patient survivor speaker at the last one in Indianapolis. We asked Susan Poteet and Gary to speak, and they were so well received. At one in Jacksonville, we had Deb Maskins come and talk, and she was absolutely stunning with her enthusiasm. So when we have the survivors that are so aware of this disease and can talk at the level of the other patients, it really brings it home. It brings it home in a way that I couldn't and so many others couldn't, but they can. And it's just wonderful to see.
That's great. It's such a wonderful service. And so tell me, what do you do for the carers, the caretakers like yourself, the bystanders who are also significantly impacted by the disease that their loved one is going through?
Well, they jump all over this. I mean, it's really not the way to suggest this is for the patient, survivor, and caregiver. It's a group.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you can't hardly say, in my case, the way when Judy had the dying process, I couldn't separate from it. I mean, it was Judy and I going through this, not Judy.
That's right.
The last 2 months of her life, I was a primary caregiver. I was still trying to work just because I needed to get my mind off it. But I was the caregiver from 8 o'clock in the evening till 8 o'clock in the morning till we had professionals come in. And that meant I had to bathe her, take care of her, because she couldn't do any of that, feed her. And it was a we thing, not a her thing, in my mind. And I think when you talk to many caregivers, it's much the same way. My story is not unique by any means. The spouse or mother or father or whatever the loved one is, that or ones that other people, everybody wants to be involved in this and learn more about it.
You said something that I wanted to follow up on earlier, and you said, I think they did tell me, but I couldn't absorb it. And been there, I hear you. Especially for the patient, the person in the hot seat, they're even more involved in they go to their head. You know, somebody, and I shouldn't say they because I've been there, but when the doctor is giving you bad news, then your brain seems to say, oh my God, that's going to do this, and if that happens, something else awful happens, and all of a sudden your head is going through those scenarios and is not really listening to the doctor. And you may be sitting there and nodding your head in all the right places, so the doctor thinks you're getting it, and you're just not there. So these support groups provide another opportunity to get that information, to process it at a slower pace, and hopefully absorb a little bit more of it. You want to speak to that?
Well, it's the... I guess the only thing I can say about that is the symposium does that, and it brings it all together. Because our pace is, you know, it's really, we pack a lot of information into this few hours of discussion. But when we have lunch, there's a break, and we have a break every 40 minutes or so. Our speakers are normally on 20-minute cycles where they'll speak for 20, and mm-hmm. we have breaks in between to encourage the discussion. So the best I can say is it's the interaction of the attendees talking to one another and realizing that there are others suffering the same thing they are. And it's so encouraging to them to know that and have that opportunity to relate to others. I'm not sure I'm answering your question well, but in my mind, I can't really separate caregivers from patients. You know, of course there is a big difference, but
no,
I'm talking about
the... I hear you. It's a team, as you said very eloquently before. It is a team effort, and Robin and I have both been the caregiver in the partnership, and it does become all-absorbing. Notice that decades later, both of us are still in the business, so to speak.
Sure, sure.
But I wanted to ask you, too, about clinical trials. Because a lot of people are afraid of clinical trials. They have all sorts of negative feelings about the very term. And why is it important for people to know about clinical trials when they're facing something like this?
It's an option to cure. It's an option to do something to fight this disease that they were likely unaware of. And the most eloquent speaker of this is the lady we all know, is Deb Maskins, who is a proponent of clinical trials. And it was at the IKCC that really opened my eyes to clinical trials. I think it's vitally important, both for the patient and also for the researchers. If you don't have patients volunteering to undergo the trial, then they can't test the drugs that would lead to a cure at some point, hopefully, down the road. So it's a win-win. It's a win for the patient if they can learn about it. And we have discussions in our symposiums. We spend at least an hour talking about clinical trials. And in the case of both Susan Poteet and Gary and with Deb, they, as the survivors, they also talk about clinical trials to make it easy for the patient and caregivers to get their arms around. So I think it's critically important. And it's an area that we haven't touched on until in my involvement in this until within the last year and a half.
Yeah, I was speaking with someone not too long ago about clinical trials, and she said, oh, but I trust my doctor. He knows all the best stuff. And I think we all want to trust our doctors, and we should, of course, but each individual doctor probably doesn't know all there is to know about clinical trials because it's such a late-breaking field. There's new stuff all the time. And so reaching out there and doing a little research on your own to add to what your doctor already knows is definitely a good thing. And the new action in cancers of all types is in the clinical trials. We forget sometimes that, what was it, Mike, 5-6 years ago, there were no drugs for kidney cancer at all.
Yes.
It's that recent, and it's only through the clinical trials that we have learned about and proven and learned to accept into normal business now the new drugs that are only 5 years old or less.
Yeah, it's amazing that in 2005 we had one drug that was FDA approved to treat kidney cancer. And now we have 11 and more on the way. That's a big change.
And Nick, one of the things that we're going to put up the links to your Facebook page, to your Twitter page probably, and also to your website. You mentioned, I think you mentioned our friend Dr. John Copeland. I think you've got a video of him going through his lab at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville and kind of giving a tour on that. And you've also got several patient support speakers that's on your website, haven't you?
Yes, we do. And that's an ongoing program where we find people that are willing to go before the camera. And we have a very talented gentleman who does the interview and filming. And after we edit that presentation, we post it up on our website and to YouTube for others to consume and evaluate.
And one of the things I want to touch on and draw out of the conversation, you know, we're talking about kidney cancer, obviously, through the JNF organization. But this holds true for virtually numerous of the cancers out there, that there's not a lot of information. There's some clinical trials going on, but there's not a lot of approved medications and treatments and everything. And at one point when you first organized, you kind of realized that, hey, we're not really making a whole lot of progress on this, because what we're pursuing on the early detection, like you said, from the ability that you had as an organization, was unreachable. So you kind of reinvented your organization, haven't you?
Yes, we have. And much of that is because of listening to patients. Excuse me. We've got two or three people that are very close to us who are part of our board. And one lady has had both kidney cancer and breast cancer, and is such an incredibly strong woman. And one of the wonderful things about it is she doesn't sugarcoat anything. She tells us just like it is, and we pay attention. We listen to her and others like her, because while I might think my heart's in the right place, sometimes my brain isn't. And we need to listen to people who are closer to it than we are. So it's paying attention to those patients, caregivers who are dealing with it. And again, I can't say enough about the IKCC to help us evolve to where we are today.
Wonderful.
Okay, ladies, you got any comments for this incredible guy? I tell you, I'd love to just sit and talk to Nick all day. He's got some fantastic ideas.
Yeah. So, Nick, what do you do in your other life, your business?
I'm a real estate broker. I have companies that deal in both residential real estate on a Century 21 franchise and a Coldwell Banker commercial franchise here in Jacksonville. So I'm pretty fortunate in that I have something to work at daily. And then on the other side, I have two children and 10 grandchildren, and they're all within 10 miles of me here.
Fabulous.
So that's another blessing I've got.
I would say so, for sure. And much due to your good Judy, whose life was unfortunately shortened by kidney cancer, but hopefully you're working hard to help other people not only have an easy journey through kidney cancer, but to survive it and to do well.
Well, that's our goal. You said it very well. We're very passionate about it. We lead from our heart, which is both good and sometimes leads us down the wrong alley. But we're trying very hard.
Nick, I'm going to send Joyce a link to the to your little kidney cancer character. Are you still using that character and putting some videos out?
Yeah, Kidney Chesney, and we've done very well with that. Kidney, we have you'll see the suit we've got for him or her, but I guess Kidney, to take off on Kenny Chesney. We feel like one of these days Kenny Chesney's, you know, lawyers are going to call us. They haven't so far.
You might get an official endorsement from him, actually.
Well, we went to a lawyer asking, should we ask him officially? They said, well, probably not.
Probably not. But the Uptown Funk video, I watched it this morning as I was kind of going through the website and everything, and it is absolutely precious. And you know, and so we'll share that link. We'll put that link on our...
Raising awareness of symptoms, or tell me about it a little, because I haven't seen it.
It's just a video, Mike. You can tell them about it. It's just a fun character talking about kidney cancer and making it accessible. It is a serious subject, but we tried to take the seriousness away from it. Mike, would you comment?
I don't know where you got all those dancers and who did the choreography on it, but it's an incredible little video, and it's worth watching. It's entertaining. And, you know, that's the thing about it, though. It's like you said about the clinical trials. You know, if your doctor mentioned that to you, it went right over your head because you were going through such an incredibly trying time at the time. And sometimes we need to lighten the burden for people And that's what you're doing through a lot of your symposia and material, I think. You're helping people to deal with this topic that that is so traumatic to them. And we appreciate you doing that, Nick.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be part of the groups that you all are involved in, as I am, and to be having this discussion, because it's through things like this that open the doors to others, open the windows, and let the sunshine in. It's heartening.
Nick, let me ask you one more thing. I know you said in the beginning you were focused on early detection because, unfortunately, her kidney cancer was found only after it had already metastasized. So the trick to all cancers, really, is to find it early. When it's just little, it's just beginning to get off the ground before it has spread to other places, and hopefully you can deal with it much more successfully in the early stages. But kidney cancer, like so many of the cancers of internal organs, is pretty sneaky and will sit there pretty quietly for a long time before you realize what's going on. Did you all, in retrospect, did you all have any early symptoms that you, if you had realized it at the time, might have tipped you off?
No. No, there was no swelling, no blood in the urine or stool. There was no abnormal fatigue. I mean, she was a working lady. She worked, and, you know, the only thing is I looked back, you know, maybe it, when she came home in the evening, she might have been a little bit more fatigued than previously. But also, as I looked back, at the time, she was 67, I was 68, and you figure, well, you know, I'm getting a little older. Maybe I should be a little tired. So you didn't think much of it.
Mm-hmm.
No, there were no symptoms, no warning signs whatsoever.
Right. And even read the risk factors. The risk factors that they list are risk factors for just about anything that could be going wrong with you. So all we can say at this point is, go to your doctor on a regular basis and do all the things they think you need to do for keeping you healthy. But sometimes cancer does sneak up on you. We are working in the field of kidney cancer. There's a lot of work going on to try to find some chemical in the urine that your GP could test for in a regular office visit. Something like that that would tip us off to, maybe we ought to do a CT. But at the moment, we don't have anything like that. And all we can do is just sort of be watchful and do the kinds of things that everyone needs to do to stay healthy. Any other comments on that?
Well, I'd say Judy had none of the characteristics that would warn you. I mean, she was thin as a pencil. She was not quite that thin, but she was, you know, slim. We don't drink, didn't drink. We would have a glass of wine, but nothing to excess. So there was no weight. There was no alcohol. There were no drugs. She'd just never been sick at all, except to have a cold occasionally.
Yeah.
So
really
this thing came right out of the blue to us.
Right. Well, you certainly have dealt with it as gracefully as anyone could, and we thank you very much for taking the time and energy and resources to share what you've learned with so many other people and help them through this journey as well.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to do it.
Well, thanks very much for being with us today, and we appreciate your time. And thanks to Robin and Mike, as always, for their good input. And thank you, everybody, for listening in with us today. We hope you'll be with us again. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take good care.